of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Well, good evening, Shasta County. We're here. I'm with my daughter, Kylie Cry. Hello, Kylie.
Hello.
It is Tuesday, August 16th. So you have just a few days left, correct, before you go back to college?
Yep.
How many?
Until Monday, so whatever that math is from now.
However many days, about 5 days. That's going to be bittersweet for us, but it's also exciting for you going into your senior year. So I want to jump into it tonight. Just to give you a quick update, though, last week we had both District 5 candidates, Baron Browning and Chris Kellstrom, scheduled to be on. Last week they are both confirmed for next Tuesday, August 23rd, back here on 1460 AM, 96.5 FM at 6 p.m., and we'll have both of them on, both confirmed, both not going out of town, so barring any big thing, they will be here. But tonight I'm super excited because tonight we have two guests, and I want to tackle a little bit of, I was down at Henderson Open Space yesterday morning, and then as well in the evening.
And then tell our listeners what Henderson Open Space is, people that are confused.
Thank you, Kylie. So Henderson Open Space is also the new Pong Park, if I pronounce that correctly. It's a huge area down by the Sacramento River at the end of Parkview, and it was at one time a beautiful park with a disc golf course, and the last roughly 8-10 years has been probably Redding's largest homeless encampment, and I think that's the best way to put it. And the city of Redding put tags on different, I guess you'd say, campsites or dwellings, because they are recognized as dwellings, and they cleared it out. And there was well over 100 individuals outside the now wrought iron fence, outside the gate, and they're all camping out there now, and that area is being red-tagged. But what I've really tried to do the last period of time is really understand the mental health, the crime, the homelessness, and addressing that as part of my campaign. So I have two individuals here tonight who I'm super excited to have, Brenda Woods, and as well as Hillary Young. Brenda is someone who I've really grown to respect on a lot of levels. She has a daughter that is currently homeless, has mental health issues, and Brenda was actually out there yesterday morning. I bumped into her. And she saw what was going on, and I'll jump to her here in a second and kind of talk about that. And then Hillary actually has 53 rental units or apartments and accepts HUD. So what I want to do is we're going to talk a little bit about the housing process and just about the situation we're in and how, quote-unquote, easy it is. I'm doing air quotes. Nobody can see that, obviously, over airwaves. But how easy or hard it is to actually get HUD or some of these bed spaces. And actually, Brenda's had a lot of conversations with different organizations and truly how many beds there are, how many services are readily available. The last thing I'll say was what was really hard for me, and there was a gentleman there who I do know, Officer Kettle, phenomenal guy. He's part of the CIRT response team. And I was shocked with a $300 million budget, roughly, at Shasta County's Health and Human Services. They had, I believe, one person there. And the lack of collaboration between city and county government was so staggering to me that we didn't have more people on the ground with that many people displaced and what was going on. I just was like, wow, this is, I won't say exactly my words, but it was crazy. It's crazy that there wasn't more organization and help of these individuals. Now, I still have the same stance that people that need to get help, we have to get them help. People that choose not to get help and that need it and want to break the law, they need to be in jail. And we really have to have a situation where we clean this up, because this is beyond out of hand and it's beyond unsafe and it's beyond unclean. So I want to start with you, Brenda. What time did you get down there yesterday at the Henderson Open Space?
So I think I got down there between 7:30 and 8, because I got off work and popped on the internet. And
you're a medic. You're a medic, correct?
I'm an EMT. EMT. I'm a firefighter, yeah.
Okay.
So when I got home, I just popped on the KRC website and was like, oh, they're clearing it out today. I'm like, oh, my God, I didn't even know this was happening. And because my daughter is down there, I needed to go down because there's not a whole lot of people advocating for these people down there. And this isn't my first time witnessing a sweep like that. When they cleared Smile Place a couple years ago, it was kind of the same thing. They built the fences and then, you know, their little tractors came and they were just picking up tents and, you know, belongings and just throwing them in the dumpster. So when I got down there, I was shocked. I felt like it was something out of a movie. There was like, you know, 200 pieces of equipment and just people everywhere. And, you know, the homeless were just, they were frantic, you know, and there's a lot of mentally ill people having meltdowns and yelling and, you know, getting in other people's faces when they're trying to get their stuff out. So, yeah, it was a shock.
Now, did you see your daughter?
I did not see her at that time, no. I think I was there for about 2 hours, and then I left, and then my daughter called me, and I went back down and picked her up. So
when I got a couple phone calls that I should go down and check it out just based on what was happening, and I arrived, and this is when I bumped into you, where there was that 65-year-old lady who had the generator and was on oxygen, and the water tender truck sprayed her and all of her belongings to try and keep the dust down, which I get it. I don't fault a driver. He might not have seen her or whatever.
Right.
But to me, like, where is a 65-year-old lady, you know, who could be anybody's grandmother,
right,
on oxygen, no substance abuse issues? Like, where is, like, she going to go? Like,
yeah,
you know. So that's what I bumped into you, and then we kind of went different ways because I just wanted to keep going down farther and seeing more what was going on. Now, Hillary, you live off of Lake Boulevard.
Yep.
In District 1.
Yep.
Great district.
Yes.
So,
the best.
And in the Panorama area, mm-hmm, what's your background or understanding about people that camp illegally in that canyon down by Masonic or et cetera?
Yeah, well, every year we have a fire. And usually it's many, many closer. Sorry. We usually have several fires. And, you know, I know one of Johnny's old baseball coaches was a fireman. He always said every year they were trying to clear that out. Because
Johnny's your son.
Johnny's my son.
Okay,
yeah.
Johnny's your son.
And because they were always so worried about it going up the canyon, just like, you know, off of in Paradise and getting into those neighborhoods. And, you know, everyone's small. There's arson as kids, but there's huge transient camps that they've always kind of been there, but it's really much worse lately, and they surround all of Sulphur Creek, and I'm not sure what it's called, but it's by the railroad trestle in between.
Yep.
And so, you know, we get fires every year, and we're standing outside waiting, you know, to see how far it gets. And, you know, and then you have a lot of traffic through the neighborhood.
Like break-ins.
Break-ins, yeah, especially anybody bordering the green belts. You know, yep, if there was a vacant house, somebody was on vacation, they'd set up camp inside of a house, you know, and they're always kind of prowling around the neighborhood at night now, where if you ever knew that neighborhood, Panorama Heights, it's super quiet, mellow neighborhood, really. It's a great neighborhood, but you usually don't have foot traffic. It's kind of, you know,
yeah,
so it's brought a lot more unsavory traffic.
Yeah.
We had someone actually a couple nights ago, 4:15 a.m., just walk right up to our front door and try to open it and get in, and then try to climb over a gate, you know, and you know that where they came from, really.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's tough. That's tough to swallow, especially being a dad, especially a dad of daughters.
Mm-hmm.
I know you have daughters.
Yep.
Young kids at home. So, Brenda, so let's go back to yesterday. So, as you're going through that, and then you see the table set up, and the table was the CIRT team, which was Officer Kettle,
correct,
RPD,
yeah,
and then Shannon. I don't remember her last name. I think it started with a G. Was it Goodwin?
I think so, something like that.
Okay, and then Shannon was with the county.
She's with the county housing, yeah. She was there for the housing list.
Okay, so tell us a little bit about how, like, what you learned about that, where they were set up, and because evidently, right, the media, or as it was explained to me, that everybody was offered all these beds in Shasta County.
Right. So in the article that I read, it said there was 200 beds available, and I'm like, yeah, that's not true. You know, because I've been doing this for 6 years, so I understand how this works, and, you know, the waiting lists are a mile long. So when I first got there, I talked to one of the officers, and I can't remember his name because they all have funny spelling. So
it's probably Officer Smetak. He's probably,
maybe, yeah.
Yeah, he's Lieutenant Smetak. It's a hard one to pronounce.
Yeah, it's like Hawaiian. I don't know.
Yeah.
But anyway, so when I talked to him, it seemed like he was very misinformed because he's like, yeah, you know, they're going to offer emergency housing and they have these 200 beds. And I'm like, yeah, that's not true. you know, and then Monique showed up, so she kind of calmed the conversation down, because I can get a little elevated when it's like, you know, somebody's telling you the wrong information. And I think that's what's the most frustrating for me. So, you know, and he told me that the CERT team is actually going to go from person to person, tent to tent, and let him know that, hey, we're going to offer you some services. You know, what do you need? Well, that never happened. And then when the table was set up, yeah, they just sat there. They only sat up there. So nobody down in the loop where they're all camped out now knew that they were even sitting there. And I went and talked to people, and I said, hey, have you been offered services? I'm like, they're like, no. And I said, well, I was told they were here a couple days ago, too, and they were set up in a different place where I believe was by the spigot. But if that doesn't make it through the camps, you know, because that's, I think that space is like, gosh, 30 miles long, yeah, I want to say.
It's huge.
It's huge, yeah. Well, so if they don't get that message at the end, how are they going to know that there's somebody sitting up there to go and fill that paper out?
And especially if they're in a mental state where I heard somebody said, like, some people ran because they thought, like, if you're dealing with mental health issues, you see police or anybody that you don't recognize, you might run.
And that would be my daughter. She runs. She hides. She's, you know, she just thinks they're there to put her in a mental institution. She believes they're still asylums, and that's how she describes it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't want you to put me in the asylum.
They don't trust it.
You know? No,
they don't trust
not at
me.
All.
So they would run or not respond, probably.
Yeah. You know, and I don't think there's any like winners. I think the police are put at an absolute huge disadvantage. I mean, they didn't mm-hmm. sign up for that.
Right.
They're not waste management. They're not. I mean, that's not what they signed up. They signed up to serve and protect and do that. And they're doing that, but it's in such a different capacity.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm.
And I think it's unfair to a lot of the individuals. Now, again, I'll say it's unfair to the individuals that truly need help, that have mental health issues.
Right.
It's not unfair to the ones that are legally camping and are choosing to break the law and continue to do that.
Right.
I mean, that's a whole other issue. And it's not fair to the neighborhood.
Yeah, it's super dynamic.
It's very dynamic.
There's nothing static about anybody out there.
So I want to go now into, because this is the big thing for me, is understand, because I don't think micro shelters are the answer. I don't think immediate housing is the answer. I think that's mm-hmm. a very big Band-Aid. But I do want to understand if they're putting out information that says, oh, housing will fix it. Okay, great. So there's 200 beds. Let's see if that's actually true. So tell me a little bit about the work you've done today as it relates to housing and services, because then I want Hillary to talk a little bit about the HUD process as a landlord, as a owner, property owner.
So it's kind of hard when you go, like, especially if you're going to Facebook for information, which a lot of people do, and they take that as gold. So for me, when I hear those things, and I know law enforcement's trying, and I do feel sorry for them, and even being a first responder myself, it's very frustrating because our hands are tied. You know, we have a duty to act. You know, what else are we going to do with them? You know, we have to treat them to the best of our abilities, and that doesn't always happen. You got good people on all sides of the EMS system. You have bad people on all sides of the EMS system. So, you know, they can aggravate a lot of these people and vice versa.
Mm-hmm.
But I wanted to make sure that I still had the correct information, that it was still, you know, hard to get the housing. You know, is there still HUD? Is it still a 5-year wait list? Because generally that's where it sits, mm-hmm. whether it's Section 8 or HUD.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and explain, Hillary, Section 8 versus HUD.
There's county and city. So and it's the same program, and a lot of times they just call it HUD. But it's... There's city HUD, Section 8, and then there's county HUD. And I, for the life of me, cannot remember. One of them is a shorter wait list, a little bit easier to get on, and I want to maybe say it's county.
There'll be no test. We won't hold
okay,
you to it.
Okay.
We won't hold you to it.
I haven't had to think about it for a while. But what I do know is anyone that I've ever encountered that was applying for HUD, I have said, hey, go get on the city list as well. And they don't know, like, no one even tells them that time, like, because sometimes people just need housing. They don't care where it's at. And the problem, too, is what if you got county HUD? Well, what if you can't find something out in the county that will take it? Because most landlords don't take it. You know, you might not be able to find housing there. Then you would have to go through a process again to get your county HUD certificate transferred to be city HUD. So, you know, so but they do the same thing. It's just that,
okay.
You know.
So what we're going to do is in about 30 seconds, we're going to take a quick break. So before we go to break, the last 20-minute segment, we're going to take calls. And so if you'd like to call in and ask some questions of Brenda or Hillary, or I guess Kylie or I, but Brendan Hillary would definitely be the people you'd want to ask questions of. In this instance, would be 530-605-4567. Again, that number is 530-605-4567. When we come back, Brenda, I want to start right there with the difference between Section 8 HUD and then the conversations you had with the different services. We'll be right back.
Resort and Casino to see the award-winning Nitty Gritty Dirt Band. The Nitty Gritty Dirt Band remains one of the most accomplished bands in American roots music.
You and me go fishing in the dark.
This high-energy show will fill the event center Friday, October 7th. Tickets start at $30.
Plus fees. Must be 21 to attend.
Purchase your tickets now at the River Club or WinRiver.com and find your moment at Wind River Resort and Casino.
And now, the Real Estate Minute, brought to you by Vista Real Estate.
When selling your home, you're probably already aware of the marketing tools realtors use to get the job done. But do you know how those tools are being leveraged? Are you getting the best possible exposure? Or is your realtor just doing the bare minimum? Hi, I'm Chad Phillips with Vista Real Estate. When you're ready to sell, make sure you ask your realtor what their vision is for marketing your home. Every home tells a story, and your realtor should showcase that story, utilizing creative photography, aggressive internet advertising, print media, and more. In addition, make sure your property is being marketed to other areas. Before you choose a realtor to represent you, ask if they plan to target more than just local buyers. Interview at least three realtors and make sure Vista Real Estate is on your list.
The Real Estate Minute is brought to you by Vista Real Estate. Call 530-247-0700 or visit VistaReading.com today.
Hi, this is Amber from Ninja Coalition HQ, Reading's premier ninja gym. Based off the popular TV show American Ninja Warrior, we offer group and private ninja training classes, including parkour, open gym sessions, private birthday parties, field trips, and our very popular ninja night out. We are located outside the Mount Shasta Mall. Stop by and sign up for a class or book your next party. Mention this ad and receive $25 off your party or $20 off your first month's membership. Check us out on Instagram or visit our website, ninjacoalition.com. We look forward to seeing you at Ninja Coalition HQ, Reading's premier ninja gym.
But I would walk 500 miles and I would walk 500 more just to be the man.
Right, we're back. 1460 AM, 96.5 FM. So, Brenda, we're going to pick right back up with Hillary just described the difference between Section 8 and then HUD, city versus county. So let's pick up from there after you talk to the person at the table there, and then we talk about these 200 beds. Tell us how true that is or not true and what services are available.
Okay, so when I was down there, I actually called the mission and wanted to find out why they weren't down there. You know, if you have all these beds available, because it was never clarified where the 200 beds were. So we had a long conversation. And he said, yeah, we're not a catch-all because the media and the board are under the impression that this is a catch-all and they can do everything, housing, get IDs, help people get their Social Security cards and birth certificates. Well, that's not true. And it is a 30-day in, 30-day out program. And to get that extended, as long as you're capable of following all the rules and stuff, then you can extend that. But he said he would be lenient on that. And if we wanted to bring people down, he would accept them. But he said, yes, the housing is almost unattainable. Mm-hmm. You know, it's the lists are long. And
do you remember who you talked to?
I don't. It was a director.
I always
go to the top.
Was it Jonathan Anderson?
It might have been, yeah. So, and he was really nice. We had a great conversation, and it, you know, I hadn't talked to him before. So, you know, I'd only had my experiences going in there on an ambulance, you know.
Yeah.
So.
Well, I believe there's like one person that does intake.
Yeah, right, he only has a budget for one person, which shocked me because, you know, like, and then when I, a few years ago when I wanted my daughter to go there, you know, we didn't have a very good experience, so it left a kind of a sour taste in my mouth. It was like, well, you know, my daughter's dyslexic. Are you going to help with the paperwork for her? And they're like, well, we're not going to handhold him. And he did apologize for that, but,
yeah,
you know, those are my experiences with that. But, yeah, they don't have the capacity to hold all these people. Mm-hmm. And then when you're talking about people with addiction and or mental illness or both, it's very hard to stay in a confined space and behave. So then if you get kicked out, you're 30 days out, and then you have to come back, sit in front of a board, which is very intimidating, I'm sure. I've not done it, but I don't like it. You know, and then you have to tell them that you'll behave and you can come back in. That's how I know it. So it was really nice, and he said I could call him back, and we'll probably have more conversations about space and beds and all that.
Yeah.
But it's not a catch-all. It doesn't work for everybody, and they don't have medically assisted detox there. So then I go to the next, you know, HSSI, you know, the housing authorities and stuff like that, and they're all telling me the same thing. It's, yeah, there's this wait list. You have to file the application, and if you qualify, you will get a voucher. And then when you get that voucher, it's if you qualify to actually get into an apartment or a house. Who's going to take it?
Okay, so let's just hypothetically say Jane or Joe get a voucher. They get to that process. They take that voucher then to you, Hillary, as a landlord?
They'll give them a list to call, like landlords that accept housing vouchers. And then they can come on down, and they would apply just like anything else. So you have to qualify. Well, most, especially in Reading and especially in the rental market that is right now, which is very difficult.
Difficult? Go into detail, Bob.
Well, rents are astronomical.
Competitive.
More than competitive. Yeah. This is the highest we've ever seen. And when you really look at it, do you think that is, you know, on par with Shasta County? I personally don't see that.
They're not.
I think they're out of this world, like, you know, for the area. And so who is going to qualify for three times the rent? And especially if you're coming off the street, if you qualify.
So let's look at this. I mean, as a entrepreneur myself, mm-hmm. a small business owner, you have a property. That's your investment. Mm-hmm. That's what you said. Your son's name is Johnny.
Yeah.
Okay, so that provides Johnny his cleats, his mm-hmm. mat, his schooling, whatever.
Yep.
So what are some of the things you look for to rent to somebody on an application?
Well, you know, you want
to. And this is remedial. I'm trying to dumb it down so that way people that haven't had to rent an apartment in years understand what you look for. Yeah. I'm guessing income.
Yes.
Last residence.
Yeah. So you're going to look for, exactly. Rental references, personal references. A lot of people that really heavily rely on credit. You know, I'm a small business owner. It's mine. We own it with our grandma. So we can do what we want. And I do what I want. But other rental companies and most are not like me. They're very strict about having triple amount of the income, you know, and they really rely heavily on rental references, you know. And, you know, life happens to people.
Yeah.
And so some people, and I've had tenants that have come in that didn't have the best rental history because of some life circumstance, but have been the most amazing tenants, you know. Doesn't mean that that's what's going to lay out for them.
Absolutely.
But that is
there. But it's highly competitive.
It's very highly competitive.
So because it's so highly competitive, so your daughter, Brenda, if she had a HUD voucher, what's the likelihood that she's going to qualify at?
Zero.
Yeah.
So if you're talking about, so you got your private business people like mm-hmm. yourself.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
And then you have the rental companies. They are very strict. Mm-hmm. And now I'm learning that a lot of them are not even taking co-signers now. Like I have my youngest daughter who's 25 with a daughter, you know, her landlord's kind of a bully, and they want to raise the rent and make, mm-hmm. and get them into these contracts. And, you know, she calls me up hysterical, like, I don't know if I'm going to have a house in a week. And I go, we'll take care of it. We'll make it work. So, you know, she can't even move because of those, you know, three times the income, 630 mm-hmm. credit score. And what kid out of high school even has a chance? Nobody. How many kids are couch surfing? That's considered a type of homelessness. Yeah, it might not be out here. They got a roof, but they're still homeless. You know, so all those requirements are super strict. And, now a lot of them aren't taking cosigners. And it's at least $3,000.
Did you go to school, Kylie, with a lot of kids as juniors or seniors that were couch surfing?
Oh, yeah. Like, lots of kids I knew from high school that decided to go to college, they had to move out of the area because can't live with parents or rent is way too expensive.
Yeah, for the income that you can generate here, especially, you know.
And what kid comes out of college with a high credit score?
Right.
Or
exactly.
Even high school.
Or any credit score, for that matter.
Exactly.
I've rented to some who've graduated with Johnny.
Yeah.
Because I know them. Yeah. And, you know, but otherwise they had already been looking for months and months and months and didn't qualify for many reasons, like all the reasons, basically.
Got it. Okay, so Brenda, so with this, so you called the mission. What was the next phone call? You said HHIS.
Yeah, I always go to the housing. Well, I think I called the housing authority. I couldn't get through to the Reading one. I got through to Shasta County. But Reading's going to tell me the same thing because I've had these phone calls 1,000 times. And then I called Shasta County, and she goes, we don't have any housing right now. You have to fill the application out. We'll get back to you at some point. Couldn't give me a timeline. I don't know when, but we'll get back to you. So Leanne had been on that program before, and I couldn't remember whether it was Reading or County, but she no longer exists in the system. So she had already been on it, but for some reason we never got that phone call. And now here we are starting over again. Right. So they're just saying that the housing is tough. There's no housing. Yeah. And so then I called because Roxanne Burke came in and talked about the emergency housing grant that they're
and
trying
Roxanne
to get.
Roxanne Burke is?
She is HSSI. I'm not
for the county.
Yeah. So I tried to get a hold of her, but she was in a meeting. But even then.
So I was at the board today.
Yeah.
And I know you were there. I don't know if you were. Were you there when she spoke?
No, but I watched from home.
Okay, so did you see her piece? I mean, some of this was like, she was like surprised that they had this and
yeah.
there was that many people.
Yeah, and it was a little confusing because on one hand, she looked surprised and sounded shocked, and then the board made it sound like, oh, you guys were all there and this is awesome. You know, people yeah. are just refusing housing, and I'm like, wait a minute, I wanted to drive back down there.
This is, and again, like I want to keep hearing from you, but this is like, kind of like in that cartoon, the frying pan to the face, you know, I'm just like, wait a minute, I'm watching this and I have, I'm growing even more and more, even for some of the supervisors or even council people that I don't remotely agree with, I can start to respect more and more the things that they put up with and go through. But at the same time, I started to see some very placating conversations and attaboys and backslaps. It's like, no. This was a huge moment for the neighborhood, of the Henderson Open Space neighborhood. Because
right.
I walked that, I'll just say aggressively, like I walked that a lot because I wanted to hear people's opinions of what was going on in their backyards. I had so many residents invite me into their home, invite me into their backyard, pull up a seat, watch the people. Let's count them like you're counting sheep. And it was just incredible. But to see all these... You know, I don't know if they were sanitation workers or if there was a lot of volunteers, a couple different, I believe, ministries picking up garbage and stuff like that. But there were so many people, but yet it was just like cleaning and moving stuff. But it was like watching, to some degree, it was like watching one of my younger kids, maybe Kara or Cannon, who are 10 and 14, move stuff around in their room, but they're not cleaning it. They're just moving it around. And it's still, so now you look outside the fence and there we are. And what is the county? What are we doing?
And there was nobody there. It was like they wanted to do this, but there was no plan. This is like when they closed down the state facilities for mental health. They closed them without a plan. So where did all those people go? They went right to the street.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so this is the same thing. You did this without a solid plan. The right hand didn't know what the left hand was doing, and now what? So now where are they going to go in 3 days after this red tag?
Yeah.
They're going to be on your business front. I mean, I have a video of somebody shooting heroin right in front of my salon downtown Reading. Now, that's the first time I've seen that there. I've heard it happens there, but that was the first experience. And I didn't even experience it. It was my daughter, my 25-year-old daughter that works in my salon. But, you know, that's what it is. I mean,
yeah, I'm just shocked at the lack of collaboration on stuff. I mean, I moved equipment from Hong Kong to Reading, you know, more seamlessly than what I saw yesterday, and I'm dealing with language barriers and everything else. And I see this, and it's like we have like why wasn't? I mean, how many services do we have in Shasta County? 6, 8, 12 different organizations. Why do they not have tables set up?
Yeah. And it's really hard to say because the stuff that they started out with 6 years ago that we were working through was like the access team and the whole person care, which was a pilot program, and it was great. Well, now they lost their funding or however that went away. It turned into a different program, but she really couldn't tell me what the program was. So that was kind of like the CERT team. They'd send people out, and then the access team would go out, bring the people into the whole person care, you know, and they'd get them situated somewhere. But the problem with that is all the programs are outpatient. They call it AOT. My daughter can't do AOT because you let her out the door and it's squirrel.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she's going to run to where she feels safe. And it's like a drug addict. If that's their demon, that's where they're going to run. You give them that freedom to go, they're going to run.
Yeah.
And it just does come down to the constitutionality rights of a person. But, man, you know, what do? Break a little bit of constitutional right, or do we let them die? My daughter's probably going to die up there. She's 100 pounds today. This is the smallest I've ever seen her. And she's tiny anyway. And then you have 100 other women out there like that are pregnant, like the pregnant lady that Dr. Patton helped.
Yeah.
You know, so – and.
Well, yeah, and again, that's the thing, right? Because I have a lot of sympathy for law enforcement because they can't ticket somebody and then ticket him again the next day and take him to jail because there's no space. But we can't even, like, this is a whole other show that'll be in probably 2 or 3 weeks, but, you know, we can't even staff the jail we have.
Right.
So now we're looking at adding more beds. So until we address the staffing issue, it doesn't matter if we have a million beds. You don't have anybody to watch them. So with that, law enforcement's hands are tied. So what do they do? Like, their tickets have no teeth. So I want to go back to part of the housing thing. So after that, so where are you left now as like a, as a taxpayer, as a mom, as a person? How do you feel now since yesterday and today?
I think I'm just shocked at the inhumane treatment of these people. When my daughter first got out there, I remember the first thing I ever wrote on one of the crime watches, or read, and she had been walking down the street, somebody took a picture, and they were like, oh, she needs to be shot in the head. And I think I emailed like 50 people. I'm like, you don't know her story. She just lost a baby. And this is deeper than just, it just goes so much farther than that. You know, so right now, it's kind of numbing. I don't really know what to do. You know, I can't help my daughter. You know, I can't put her in a facility. The gravely disabled laws are so high that families can't step in. They got this wall in front of us where we can't even help. We're out here. We're grandparents and aunts and uncles taking care of kids that aren't even, you know, that our children should be raising. But we're putting in that position, and we have no help. There are no resources for grandparents, period.
Now, your daughter was in a program in Sacramento, correct? Or started to be?
We got her into the hospital, and they pretty much just doped her up because she was having a psychosis fit, you know, so they had to put her down, for lack of better words. And it was sad to watch. I mean, any time to watch.
But would you say necessary?
Yeah, it was necessary. It's hard to say that as a parent.
Well, it's better than the alternative, right?
Yeah, because you don't want them fighting people, and, you know, she doesn't want shots, but they're wanting her to have the shot. And, you know, yeah, it's ugly. It's very ugly. So they sent her to Sacramento, and she agreed to, but she was under the influence of medication. So when she finally came out of it, she was super mad. And then they can hold them for 72 hours. And then the doctors can evaluate them. That doctor called me and said, hey, I want to hold her. I said, please do. But then they go in front of some kind of judge. I don't know what that looks like. I didn't get to see that process. That judge let her go. And when they called me back and told me that, I had to go get her. I couldn't say, well, just let her go and then we'll see what happens. She's in Sacramento. She was like 23 at the time. I was afraid that somebody would like kidnap her or, you know, because we've been through the trafficking side of all of that. She's been trafficked before.
Oh.
So, and that's after she lost her baby. She got scooped up by a not so great person. So she's got a lot of trauma. So I had to go pick her up, but then people are like, oh, well, you're just making it worse because you're enabling. No, I'm not an enabler. I don't want to see her dead.
And their trauma just compounds.
It's just, you know, this was her fifth pregnancy with the baby. So she has three live births and two deceased. One was an abortion, but she doesn't see it like that. She sees it that she had a baby and lost it. That's where her reality is. So, now this is numbing.
Yeah.
You know, I want to go down there every day, and I've been talking to people, and I actually went down there again today and talked to two more ladies that, you know, we want the help. We just don't know what to do, you know. But then.
Yeah. And I know we've, I think, developed somewhat of a rapport, a friendship. I mean, we haven't seen each other really outside of meetings. Now we see each other at a radio station, but. You know, you've scolded me when you think I was too heavy-handed, and I appreciate that because I'm very much like, you know, actions have consequences. And I have a lot of detractors that said when I had mentioned about my brother's death, when he died running from the police, and I said, you play stupid games, you win stupid prizes.
Absolutely.
His situation was different. Now, was he, on drugs and in and out of jail? It started with marijuana. That's what it was. Would he still be alive today if this whole happened now and marijuana is legal? Probably. But at the end of the day, he had meth in his system when he died.
There's a lot of what ifs.
There's a lot of what ifs. And so I think for me, when you say that someone messages on Facebook, she should be shot in the head. I mean, that was hard for me because I knew, like, the hardest thing I've ever done in my life was drive to my dad's house or my parents' house and tell my dad, like, hey, Casey died, you know, a little bit ago, and that was hard. And I've had to walk that out because a parent is never the same.
Right.
Even though we'd all kind of prepared ourselves for the possibility that someday would happen, you're just still not ready for it. And my mom will never be the same.
Yeah,
and I don't think any parent would be. But I will say that I think you're doing an amazing job because you're doing everything you can. Here's why I have a lot of respect, because you're not doing it just for your daughter. You're doing it for everybody that's down there. And so I just have a lot of respect for that. So we're going to go to break, and when we come back, we're going to take some calls, 530-605-4567. Again, that number is 530-605-4567, and we'll be right back.
Have you just received your Starlink? Congratulations! Do you need help installing it? Look no further than your local satellite professionals. That's right, B&T Satellite. Call Doug and the whole team to set up your Starlink with the same customer service you've come to know. B&T Satellite will set up your Starlink and work with you to make the experience a pleasure for you. Call today and set up your time to install the new Starlink. You know, don't call the 800 number. Call 241-3474. That's B&T Satellite, 241-3474.
And now, the Real Estate Minute, brought to you by Vista Real Estate.
When it comes to buying and selling real estate, one size does not fit all. Higher-priced homes sell differently than medium-priced homes. Make sure your realtor knows the difference and has the right tools to get your home sold for the highest price. Hi, I'm Chad Phillips with Vista Real Estate. When you're ready to sell, make sure you ask your realtor how they plan to sell your home and what they'll do differently to make your listing stand out. Ask your realtor what kind of experience they have in marketing and sales outside the real estate industry. Be sure to choose a realtor with solid marketing and sales training who also understands tech and internet advertising. Interview at least 3 realtors and make sure to call the number one high-end home selling agent for the past 13 years, me.
The Real Estate Minute is brought to you by Vista Real Estate. Call 530-247-0700 or visit VistaReading.com today.
Hi, this is Amber from Ninja Coalition HQ, Reading's premier ninja gym. Based off the popular TV show American Ninja Warrior, we offer group and private ninja training classes, including parkour, open gym sessions, private birthday parties, field trips, and our very popular ninja night out. We are located outside the Mount Shasta Mall. Stop by and sign up for a class or book your next party. Mention this ad and receive $25 off your party or $20 off your first month's membership. Check us out on Instagram or visit our website, ninjacoalition.com. We look forward to seeing you at Ninja Coalition HQ, Reading's premier ninja gym.
All right, we're back with Brenda and Hillary, and I think we have our first caller. Nick, are you there?
I'm here.
Hello,
hey,
sir.
I'm enjoying your show quite a bit, and I've talked to Brenda, and I have a lot of admiration for her. She's raising her grandkids. They need her. You know, they're cleaning up Henderson Open Space, and the neighbors are all happy and everything, but if you walk a half a mile apart now, they're moving into my backyard up here. And
thanks, Nick, for that.
I'm hearing people arguing all night, and I mean 2 and 3 in the morning. I hear dogs yapping all night. So it's no wonder the neighbors get angry and up in arms and have no patience with them. But my question is, why do they have to leave such a damn mess?
Well, Brenda, you want to take that to start? I'll say this while you can think about it, Brenda. I don't even think most of them know that they're leaving it, and I think the ones that do could care less.
So why would I, as a taxpayer, want to house them, want to give them all these services when they won't even pick up after themselves?
100%. And what I'll tell you is I've been going to Martin Luther King Park on Saturdays now. Kylie, we've been going for, what, about almost 3 months?
Yep.
Maybe 10, 11 weeks. And there are some individuals there that will come get a trash bag from me and take trash out of the receptacle that's overflowing and bag it. And then you'll see somebody go and throw something on top of the one that the person's trying to clear and it fall on the ground. And that drives me nuts because the individual that's, you know, picking up trash with their bare hands trying to make it better, I will bend over backwards, do anything I can to help someone like that. And the other person, it's like, you know, I don't want to say pound sand, but it's like, you know, there's a level of accountability there. So I don't know. Maybe you, Hillary, or Brenda have an opinion.
Well, I can only kind of speak to my daughter and the things, because when she was younger and had her first apartments, part of her mental illness was she couldn't see what we saw. Like, the kitchen would be a mess. The house would be a mess. And she's like, well, I did the dishes, but they had 5 days worth of mold on them. So in her eyes, it wasn't dirty. So some people, it's kind of like a hoarder. they don't see what we see, and what we think is trash is their treasure. And, you know, a lot of that is stuff that they believe that either they can trade for food or they can trade for whatever they're trading it for, drugs, alcohol, food. You know, that's their treasure. They feel like they have to have that. So it's kind of like that hoarder mentality. Mm-hmm. And I think that goes kind of hand in hand with mental illness. But then there are the people that just gave up and they don't care. If you're going to be mean to me, then I'm just going to destroy whatever else.
Let me share this with you. When Aaron Reisner was running for city council, I called up and I suggested that we have one camp for people that want to camp in Reading, that we provide portable toilets, wash basins, and dumpsters. And if they're going to camp in Reading, that's the only place they're welcome to camp.
And you know what? We have asked for that. That has been put on the table. And if I remember a couple years ago, there was a lady that had the portable showers, and she wanted a more permanent spot to help these people, and it was shot down.
Yeah, well, Aaron thought that was a great idea till she got on the council. And my suspicions are that the way things are right now is bringing a lot of money into the city and the county, and that's why nothing's getting done.
Yeah, I think following the money is probably the key to a lot of this. Hillary, how many apartments have you had that you've had to just, you or Paul have had to just go in and completely gut?
Oh, many, and over the last 15 years. And we've had ones that were just like you're describing, hoarders,
right.
You know, just tons of garbage in there, it's always mental health related, generally, and we've had quite a few.
I think that's the one thing that's tough is we have individuals that we're really, really trying to help, and then we have a lot of individuals that really don't want our help, and they're almost laughing at us while we're trying to offer.
You know what? That's true, because I've had I had a tenant whose daughter was homeless, and he tried to get her to come around the apartments to see, look, it's so much nicer to live like this, and she didn't. It was easier for her to not have to conform. She didn't want to conform, you know. And
well, I think that's one of the things with the mission. What I hear a lot when I'm out at Henderson Open Space or off Masonic or other places, people say, "Well, it's too religious. They're pushing this on me. They're pushing that on me." Which, okay, that's fine. I mean, and when I say that's fine, if you truly want to really, you know, gut out and just move along, you have to look at the end result. I know not everybody can do that, especially sometimes in the state where they're at that point.
Probably yeah, they're living in the moment.
Very living in the moment. And I think that, you know, it's really, really difficult to have, for me, to have a lot of compassion for some individuals that 100% choose to be out there, because like Nick mentioned, I mean, now, like he mentioned, they're coming now into his neighborhood in Hartnell, and Nick is not on the light side of 50. He's on the other side of 50. So he's worked really hard his entire life. He should be enjoying this stage of his life, and it shouldn't be, you know, having to combat break-ins and things like that on a routine basis. And again, we've hamstrung our police because there's nothing they can do.
Right. Like, and his idea and what he's saying is totally valid and good, but then you have everyone's going to be not in my backyard. I mean, do you want that by your house?
Oh.
No, because I can hear them from the open space around my neighbor. They scream all night. He's right. They, the dog's barking. They scream. You know, if you just sit outside, it's disturbing.
Yeah.
You know, but then, yeah, their hands are tied. Like, what are you going to do?
How many calls do you go on as an EMT,
Brenda? When I worked here, all the time. You can get two or three calls a night, you know, a man down, you know, somebody just having a psychosis, or, you know, just depend on what they were doing, passed out in the middle of the road.
Yeah.
I mean, they run a lot of, I don't want to say nonsense calls, because they, you know, they are having medical emergencies, but are they really that emergent?
But sometimes that's the only way they get any service or help, you
right,
know?
Yeah.
And they know that.
Yeah, but even then, when you get people that are burnt out and they're tired of running the same person, you know, they don't get treated so great sometimes. So, and I understand it. I mean, I don't agree with it. I'm a little bit more empathetic myself. I don't know why I've always been like that, even before my daughter was unwell. I just have the patience for it, I guess. But I get it. It's a burnout thing.
And they all have a story. So
yeah, everybody has a story.
They're human. And a lot of people, I think, step back from their pedestal a little bit and look down at people and not realize they're human beings that have a story. And a lot of it, you're right, is choices, bad choices that a lot of people make. And that's what I think clouds it for everybody else, you know, how they view the whole of it.
Yeah. And one good person, one bad person makes it bad for the good people that are
absolutely
really just out there.
Mm-hmm.
And the other piece to this are the dogs.
Yeah.
These dogs are like anybody's dog. I'm personally not attached to animals like that, but these people are. These are their security, mm-hmm. their kids, their safety spot, and they don't want to give up the dogs, and that's the other reason for
the housing issues. Housing.
So absolutely. we have another caller. So let's go ahead and take our caller. Dale, are you there?
Yes. How are you guys doing tonight?
Good. Is this, okay, Dale, so question for us.
Well, I only had a couple things. You guys talked about the money, and the money, I mean, we get millions and millions of dollars in this county. But unfortunately, there's no oversight. It all comes into the continuum of care. Gets, everybody's got their hand in the cookie jar, and as we can see, the results aren't great. That was one point. We talked about the free-for-all camp. You know, we had that. It was the Mercy Canyon for years. We had dumpsters all over the place. We had portable toilets. And, you know, we ended up with 5-gallon buckets full of needles out of that place when we finally cleaned it up back with Chief Paletti. As far as the police, nothing they can do. They can do plenty. We have a lot of laws on the books. But, unfortunately, here in the city of Redding, they just don't get enforced. And that's why we don't have a Shasta County homeless problem. We have a city of Redding homeless problem. The other towns around us don't have this huge problem. They don't have garbage, you know, overflowing in the parks. They have nice parks you can actually enjoy. And it's River Park. I see all my friends from Redding down there all the time.
So let me ask you this. I mean, I agree with that. I agree that, but just as devil's advocate, people will say, well, that's because Anderson, Shasta Lake, other unincorporated areas, not that those are incorporated, but other or incorporated areas can send people to Redding, and then when they get booked and released within an hour, now they've got to get a ride back to Bernie or Bella Vista or wherever.
And that's a great point, and that's a great excuse that the city of Redding likes to use, but if that was the case, then all the homeless would be in Oroville where the jail is, not in Chico.
Shasta Lake City does have a homeless problem. They're just not as thick as they are in the parks.
They're not all gone.
Yeah, they're actually in the wildland, and we do get fires out there from our homeless people. Our law enforcement there handles it a little bit differently because they do know the system is broke. Do they bring them to Redding sometimes? Occasionally they do, but I don't want to speak for them. That would be something you'd have to call them, and because I don't want to speak out of.
I've helped them clean up out by Sierra Pacific.
Yeah.
We've done a couple big cleanups out there, Black Canyon. But they handle it. Just, I mean, like Anderson, there's homeless down there. But it's just, you can go to Anderson River Park, and you're not going to see tents all over the place.
Yeah, right.
It's so much easier to deal with the problem when the first tent goes up.
Well, what's crazy to me
100%.
Is we have, because I remember when City Hall was built, it was right. I mean, I just graduated college. I was playing softball there at the back when we had fast pitch. I called it Gotham City. This huge City Hall is built. Then the library, and then what's comical is people are camping out right by the police station. Mm-hmm. And to me, like that's hard. That's hard for me to see this great library, and then they put up a wrought iron fence, and then they gather outside. And then what I saw yesterday in the evening. And it was starting to get dark, so I left because I had my 14-year-old daughter with me. And people are camping outside the wrought iron fence, and then there's a bunch of people just jumping over the fence. And I'm curious. I know they're supposed to get park rangers, but then you're talking about government building more government. So now we're going to have park rangers that we're going to be paying. So when I looked at the amount of money spent yesterday on that cleanup, I mean, it was tens.
Park rangers are going to be cheaper.
Yeah, but I'm talking about like just the resources that were spent yesterday for that was in the tens of thousands of dollars when you look at the law enforcement and the other people that were there. And granted, it's necessary. We have to do it. But we have to stop this and do something gravely different.
Well, we need to start spending back to the money. We need to start spending the money to get it to the people who need it. Stop spending it on bureaucracy, administration, and all the rest of the stuff.
Well, yeah, these six, eight, ten agencies, I mean, it would have went a long way if you had a couple agencies out there with tents and, I don't want to say like mass triage units, but what an opportunity. I mean, you have people right then that really seriously needed help and probably were going to be the most open to it because they were moving. They were moving loads of stuff.
Yeah.
Brenda, I mean, is that what you saw?
Oh, yeah. It was tons of stuff. I don't even know how they get that stuff.
Yeah, and I would encourage people. I wouldn't do it right now. I would do it, you know, earlier in the day. And, again, I can't make you sign a waiver.
It was pretty crazy in our neighborhood last night. We didn't get much sleep. It was chaotic over there.
I was curious to see what the call volume was going to be last night after all this. You know, to me, like, common sense would be why can't we call this a state of emergency? And, you know, we do it for people on the border, and we set up all these tents, you know, take a piece of government land, you know, erect these tents in one day, get these people all in one spot, you know, because Chico's kind of doing that. Yeah, they built the pallet houses, but they also dedicated an area for campers, and they're enforcing that pretty strictly. They're getting them there. So, I feel like
well,
we're doing nothing.
They're not enforcing anything right now.
Yeah, well, I was just going to say Chico.
The lawsuit that they're in, they had to just stop right now. They're back in litigation.
Yeah, okay. I mean, what scares me is I don't want, I really hope Shasta County, or specifically Redding District 1, et cetera, isn't put in the same conversations. Well, Redding and Chico and Redding. Because what's happened to Chico, I mean, I my freshman year of college, I went to Butte College, lived off of East 8th Street in Chico. And I don't, like, that's like light years away from where I went to college for a year. And I don't want to see that for Redding, but we're well on our way. Well, Dale, thanks for, do you have anything else, Dale? Like, I mean, I know you've really spearheaded that effort years ago. How long has it been? 10 years since you started cleaning that up?
I think it was 11 or 12 years ago that we first cleaned out Henderson Open Space. We put this golf course in. It was a great area. That families were coming down there. It was really good. We had it cleared out for almost 2 years, and then the city just kind of stopped enforcing the law, and we were getting, you know, people's cars broke into. We cleaned it again 5 years ago in the city cleanup, and then they kind of just buried their heads in the sand and forgot about it the last 3 years.
Well, this is what we get, and I'm not saying that happened or didn't happen, because quite honestly, embarrassingly, I wasn't really paying attention. But whatever happened, where we are now, we can't go back to this. This isn't safe. It's not good.
No, and then you talk about South City Park. My work's right there, so I deal with it all night at my house, yelling and screaming, and then I go to work and have to deal with it. It's great.
Well, thanks for calling in, Dale. So, let me ask you this, Hillary. Can I even ask you, like, how many different units you have that are HUD residents or HUD recipients? Can I ask that? Like,
well, I can't. I'm not going to disclose anybody's personal stuff.
No, exactly.
If I were to get like a gather a number right now, I
or how about across Reading, like people that are like private owners like you that have,
I don't know.
Do you know?
I do not know. I have like maybe 20%.
You guys don't play Canasta and talk about this kind of stuff as a group.
I do my own thing completely because I am not like other rental companies, because I, you know, you hear this stuff and I'm going, I have a different situation. I have a lot of long-term residents.
Yep.
Like really long-term, like people who've lived there since they were built in the 70s and 80s, 90s, like tons. And I have a huge chunk of people who've lived there since the early 2000s. And, but it's kind of a very small community of its own.
Yeah.
And
well, so 53 units isn't small.
No, it's not small.
Yeah.
No, you're right. It's funny because it's a very quiet place. So I often think, oh, it's a small place. It's really not. It's just quiet because I will have to say that because I have so many long-term residents and people who are really invested in living there, and a lot of times I'm renting to families, you know, kids that have grown up who live there and the mom lives there, or like their best friend at work or this or that. So it's a lot of people very connected to each other. But I don't have the same situation that a lot of landlords have. And I don't have problems that other landlords have. So I kind of don't even
I think you said it. You said community.
It's community. Yes.
There's buy-in.
Yes.
And that's why I think the handouts have to stop. And I'm not saying my brother or Brenda, your daughter, I don't want to reference them to an insect, but when someone says, you know, they leave a bag of sugar on the counter and can't figure out why there's ants. Like,
yeah.
We're giving out so many services to people that truly could fend for themselves.
Yes.
That we're giving them no reason to.
I can't remember the source that I'm going to say this as, but and I think it was some law enforcement that Paul worked out with, actually doing CrossFit, that was suggesting that Shasta County, Redding per se specifically, has so many services.
Oh yeah.
That it's like if you put a crab, like you're going crabbing,
yeah.
And you have a crab pot that's empty and another one with bait in it. Where are they going to go?
Yeah, well,
to bait.
Yeah.
And that's how they liken Redding, is that they're going to come here for these services. They know how to, get what they want to
yeah.
get. And,
well, and people are smart. I mean, the human race is resilient.
Yes,
smart. I mean,
so that's kind of like the insect. That's exactly how they kind of describe it.
The system teaches you how to work the system.
Work the system.
Because I raised two kids. I was in the system.
Yeah.
They forced me to have to learn how to work the system
yes.
to benefit myself.
from my experience with some of my tenants, how I've seen it, it's generational too. Some of them are second, third, fourth generation of the system working. It's how they know how to live. And it actually doesn't always benefit them to try to get off. And I've seen them trying to get off
and
the
that's
system.
Sad.
Yes, because they'll say, oh, well, if you're good enough for this, then we're going to take away everything right now.
Yeah. Right. And they do that.
And they do that. And then if you get into a situation where you need help again, it takes months to get back in.
Yeah.
Or, like right now, the HUD list is, waiting list is the lowest I've ever seen it, like maybe a couple of years.
Yes.
And I actually had someone get it within a couple of months. Their certificate, which I've never seen it work that fast. But I also think it's because there is no housing anyway.
Well, what I know is I don't have all the answers. I do know that we have to find him. We have to find him quick because my daughter and Kylie, this is our last episode together till probably Christmas break.
Yep.
We need to get this cleaned up because I want you to be able to come back here. I want it to be cleaner, safer, more affordable. So maybe you'll raise my grandkids here in a safer environment. Brenda, Hillary, thank you both so much. I really appreciate it. And I think I'm going to bring you guys back on at some point because I want to just keep learning, and this has been great. So, again, thank you, everybody, for listening to us here at 96.5 1460 AM KCNR. We'll see you next week with Baron and Chris.
Have a great week.
Have a great week.
KCNR, Shasta, Redding.
Medical Center.